You are listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice, and for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean. If you're a Civil War buff, you'll enjoy the next few minutes. Military strategists continue to study the campaigns of the Civil War. Many of those campaigns were fought right around this area because Richmond was the capital of the Confederacy. The Bermuda Hundred campaign was a series of battles fought around the area where the Appomattox and the James River meet. Scott Williams and George Fickett represent the Chesterfield Historical Society. Gentlemen, tell us about the history of the Bermuda Hundred campaign.
Bermuda Hundred campaign started on May 5th of 1864. It was part of five major campaigns that were across the country. General Grant had figured out that Confederates were transferring troops from one theater to another when there was no action going on in those theaters. So he decided on May 4th and 5th that every Union army in the field would attack on the same day and keep pressuring the Confederates because they wouldn't be able to reinforce each other in 1864. So you had the Red River campaign out in the Arkansas-Missouri area. You had Sherman heading from Chattanooga to Atlanta. You had Fran Sigel in the Valley trying to take out the Shenandoah Valley out of the food basket of Virginia. You had General Meade and Lee facing each other. Grant was supervising the overall theater of all operations. Meade does not get the credit he deserves for operating the Army of the Potomac. And then you had General Benjamin Franklin Butler and Hampton Roads, who was going to come up the James River and to make an attack on Richmond or Petersburg via the James River.
It's interesting. Lee and Meade were classmates. They liked each other prior to the Civil War. But give us the location of the Bermuda Hundred campaign. Focus in geographically on where it is.
All right. The Bermuda Hundred campaign was between the Appomattox and James Rivers. The village of Bermuda Hundred is at the point directly across from Shirley Plantation. And this was the landing point of the majority of the Army of the James in the campaign.
There were many Civil War battles. Why is this one so important, though, this campaign?
Well, this one... This campaign was a lot of famous for a lot of things maybe that didn't happen with it. It was a lot of lost opportunities with this. For example, when Butler lands in Bermuda Hundred, as George said, Meade and Lee are fighting each other at the Wilderness. And in Richmond, all eyes are focused on that battle up to the north. When Butler lands, he lands 38,000 men just a few miles from Richmond and Petersburg, and there's virtually no defense there. There's only about 6,000 Confederate troops total defending Richmond and Petersburg. So for a couple of days, the door to Richmond and Petersburg was wide open, and Butler failed to take advantage of that.
Continue. This is most interesting.
All right.
Because many people are not aware of they've heard of the many famous battles of the Civil War, but not necessarily Bermuda Hundred. And as you point out, Union and Confederate troops were kind of aligned, not just at Bermuda Hundred, but a little bit down the James River as well.
Yes, when the Army of the James proceeded up the James River, they stopped at what would be known as Fort Powhatan. Eventually, they dropped off a colored division there, or actually a couple of regiments, to defend that curve in the river because it was dangerous shoreline for federal shipping. Then they also captured Fort Powhatan on the Prince George side of the river and occupied that. Again, another elevated point that could be used by Confederates to fire on federal ships to secure the river. And then they also occupied City Point with the rest of Hinks' Colored Division there to occupy the city there, which was an important link towards Petersburg. And then the majority of the army landed at Bermuda Hundred on May 5th. They proceeded out on May 6th, got several miles into Chesterfield County, and then they sent out a reconnaissance in force towards Port Walthall Junction. Heckman's Star Brigade is what it was called, advanced four regiments over to Port Walthall Junction. And as they approached the junction, there just happened to be a Confederate train with troops heading north to go support Lee arriving at the junction. And they look out and see these federal forces there and go, they're not supposed to be here. What are they doing here? It's a surprise invasion. So about 600 Confederates got off the train and defended the junction that afternoon against about 2,500 Yankees and held them off. And Heckman's brigade finally just fell back to their prepared positions they were digging along the Bermuda Hundred front, which they were digging about a three-mile defensive line because part of Butler's agreement was to set up a base of operations so when Grant got down here, he had a place to operate out of.
We're talking about troops and battles, but part of the Union strategy was to cut off supplies as well.
Exactly. The Port Wathaw Junction intersection was a key point to destroy the railroad line and the telegraph lines between Richmond and Petersburg. They failed on that first attempt on May 6th. On May 7th, they came back out again and in force this time. They had about 8,000 Union troops, and the Confederates had brought in some more, so they had about 3,000 Confederate troops holding that line, and they'd fallen back to use the railroad bank as a fortification, and the Federal forces advanced and attacked that position, but the Confederates held and were able to till dark, and the Federal forces again marched back to their positions they were preparing 2 miles down the road. Confederates, realizing this was not a safe place to be, fell back across Swift Creek and went into positions they dug in on the south bank of Swift Creek, waiting for the Federal forces to come again. Then on the 9th of May, the Federal forces advanced all the way down to Swift Creek. Confederates were going to send out a reconnaissance in force, and it was canceled, but two Confederate regiments of South Carolina troops did not get the notice that this reconnaissance in force was called off. So here you had about 800 Confederates advancing towards 6,000 Union troops, and they got within about 30 yards of some Massachusetts troops when they opened up on them, and basically the Confederate lines melted away, and they retreated back across the bridge into what is now Colonial Heights.
I only facetiously say that they didn't have cell phones back there or radio communications, but think how that would have altered the course of the war had they had what we have today. I only facetiously say that. However, all three of us have mentioned the confluence of the James River and the Appomattox. Did naval operations play any part in this?
Yeah, Navy played a very important role in this Bermuda Hundred campaign. It's one of the more interesting aspects, I think, of what took place around here, and it's even lesser known than the campaign itself. By this time in the war, the Confederate defenses on the Navy side of things, defending Richmond, is really the fort up at Drury's Bluff. After 1862 and the ironclad Virginia is gone, the U.S. Navy pretty much has pretty free rein of the James River. It's a dangerous place for them. Their roving band of Confederate artillery, the Confederates did have three ironclads, but they had to rely on technology to defend these inland rivers. The ironclads and torpedoes, or underwater mines, as we would call them today. So early in the Bermuda Hundred campaign, as Butler is landing, he had the Navy sail up the James River to secure that river, basically hit the right flank of his army. At Deep Bottom, where Deep Bottom Park is today in Henrico County, there was one of these minefields the Confederates had in the river. The Union Navy was aware that something was there. They had picked up a slave downriver that had told them that there was a torpedo field. They were proceeding, sending Marines on the bank, trying to locate where the control structure was for these torpedoes. One ship continued up and crossed over where the torpedoes were. These were electronically fired torpedoes. What they would have was a torpedoes in the river, a electrical cable connecting them, a battery on the shore. Men in this hut, if you will, I picture it kind of looking like a duck blind, probably hidden on the bank, waiting for the ship to cross over. There was a ship called the Commodore Jones. It was a converted ferry boat from New York, 154-foot-long boat, 7 guns on it. I think it had a crew of about 90. This torpedo works. It blows up the Commodore Jones. They literally describe it as being blown to splinters and killed 40 sailors. And I think of that. If you ever go down the Deep Bottom Park and you sit there, it's this quiet, beautiful, peaceful spot on the river. And to think of 40 sailors losing their lives there, it kind of puts it in perspective. The Union Marines on the shore were able to capture, they killed one of the torpedo operators as they were running away. They captured another, and they asked him to divulge where the rest of the minefield was. He was hesitant to do that. They placed him on the bow of the lead vessel and assured him that he would either tell us where they were or he'll share their fate. And they said that made him more forthcoming with information then. But in the first three or four days of the campaign, the Navy loses the Commodore Jones. They lose another ship called the Shawsheen down around Curl's Neck. And then a foray up towards Fort Clifton on the Appomattox River, they lose a ship called the Brewster. So in the first 3 days of fighting, the Navy loses three warships, And that kind of puts the brakes on them advancing up the river and being the vanguard. They're going to wait for the army to seize land before they'll come up behind them.
I know both of you have, and many of our listeners have heard WRVA radio, and some 60 years later, that's where they planted their transmitter.
Yeah, Deep Bottom. Yeah,
And not very far from Deep Bottom Park.
No, yeah, there's still some of the earthworks that Butler's men dug when they put a foothold on the north bank of the river are still on that property.
That's correct.
Yep.
So there is a remnant today. Speaking of that, let's go on to say, certainly today, what is the Bermuda Hundred is pretty much taken over by the city of Hopewell.
No.
Am I correct?
No, city of Hopewell is across the James River in Appomattox, southeast of the Chesterfield County boundaries. So what we have is the eastern part of Chesterfield County, which is the Bermuda District. Since the advent of 95 and now 295, the growth has really, really spiraled up. And the endangerment of the existing battlefields, which were part of the 1864 campaign, or have been endangered now for a good many years since, I would say, the 1970s. They really became more endangered than ever.
That's what I want to ask you both about. Today, what would people see if they want to go tour the site?
Well, first of all, we do now have, and I'll let Scott talk about the driving tour, which we'll do. He'll make more detail. But we do have, over the last 30 years, have acquired 11 Civil War sites in the county. Parks that we've created into parks, and they have interpretive markers and things. And the driving tour takes you around to those. And it's been a long effort to acquire these properties. We've been able to get donations and federal grants and matches from other sources to purchase these properties and get them donated to the county.
I want to hear more about the preservation of that, but I'm sure our listeners would want to know, if they want to take this tour for themselves, how do they go about it? Is there a brochure they can get?
Yes.
Using the driving tour?
We several years ago, we put together a Bermuda Hundred campaign driving tour book that the Chesterfield Historical Society sells at their headquarters and at their bookstore at Magnolia Grange, which is located on Route 10, right across from the old Chesterfield Courthouse. As George said, we had these 11 sites all over the county preserved, but to someone that doesn't know the area, they were kind of hard to find. So we put together this book. It gives you the history of the campaign, turn-by-turn directions of how to find the location. It's something to kind of link all of these sites together so that you can get the big picture. And one of the main things we did in it is the maps. We did modern maps with the Civil War features overlaid, because some of these places, the landscape has changed so much, it would be hard to recognize looking at a period map. So we think that's the feedback we've gotten, that's been a big aid to tourists is visiting these sites, is the maps.
Now, getting that book, the place where you get the book is many miles away from Bermuda Hundred.
6 miles.
Yeah, about 6 miles. Yeah.
You can't get it right there.
Right. No. And we also have them available at the Petersburg National Battlefield and Richmond National Battlefield carry our books also. So if you want to go to their bookstores, they're available at their bookstores also.
And then you can get Historical Park also.
Henricus. And then you can also call the Chesterfield Historical Society and order it and have it mailed to you.
We'll get those addresses or phone numbers before we end the interview, because people may want to do that. Certainly when you go to a national park, you go to the visitor center, there's all the maps and books that you need right there. But here you have to kind of plan in advance, am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us more about the tour.
Well, if you're going to really take it and take it in detail, the times we've run it, it would probably take you about 2 days to do the entire thing. We've broken it up into sections. You can simply go to certain sites that you're interested in and just take those in for the day. Or if you're a real hardcore Civil War historian and you want to go site by site and follow the it follows the campaign in chronological order. So it's going to run you all over the county as you follow where the troops went. But it's a good day trip, or a 2 day if you want to make a weekend out of it.
Many people are Civil War buffs, and they study it from the standpoint of military strategy, and they go to all the battlefields in the area from Maryland on south. And as you both know, and our listeners know, many of the battles took place here. Perhaps not many of the ones with have famous names, but they took place here because of Richmond's prominence as the capital.
Mm-hmm. Correct, correct. And what happened is back in the early 1990s, remember what was called the third Battle of Manassas, when they were going to try to build a mall right on the Manassas battlefield? And that's how the Civil War Commission was created by the federal government, to study all the battlefields in the country. And they took 10,000 engagements and narrowed that down to about 380 and said these are the most prominent, significant Civil War events that need preservation out of that fiasco in Manassas. And actually, Chesterfield County has 5 of those 380 within the county. Battles that most people never heard of: Port Wathaw Junction, Ware Bottom Church, Woolridge Hill. Well, Woolridge Hill is part of the Drury's Bluff battle, but these battlefields are really no-name battlefields, but they were militarily historically significant because of what occurred there that altered the prevention of the capture of Richmond or Petersburg. So that's why these battles were more significant.
And to add to that, you make a good point. A lot of battles took place in this area, and that's one of the reasons the Bermuda Hunter campaign is not known very well. When you compare all of this action in Bermuda Hunter was taking place at the same time as the Battle of Wilderness, Spotsylvania, Cold Harbor. So from the beginning of May to the middle of June, Grant and Lee inflict 90,000 casualties total, combined casualties in Virginia. You compare that to the 6,000 casualties that are suffered in the Bermuda Hundred campaign. It just gets overshadowed by these larger events. And as a result, and it's also looked upon somewhat as a failure. So Bermuda Hundred campaign gets overshadowed as time goes on and was largely
lost,
forgotten to history until probably about the mid-80s.
Why was the interest rejuvenated?
Well, I started working for the county in 1971, and part of my job at that time was driving around the county and being a Civil War enthusiast. I started noticing earthworks in the county. I couldn't find anything about them. You'd go to the official records, and you'd see a few reports or a few things, or battles and leaders of the Civil War that described the Battle of Drury's Bluff. But as far as what else happened to get there, nothing definitive was written. So in studying this, I started to try to save a couple of sites with just basic information, and was in the process of negotiating for those when two definitive books finally got published in 1987, that both of them were on the Bermuda Hundred campaign. The one was titled The Bermuda Hundred Campaign by William Herbert M. Schiller. He's in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. And then also William Glenn Robinson wrote a book called Backdoor to Richmond that were both about the campaign. So now, after having those two books and read them, I have put everything now in perspective to why these earthworks were there, the movements of the troops, the things that there was no way to put together up until that time. With that information, we were able to start really saving Civil War sites in the county. And the first 3 or 4 we got were totally donated without any cost or expense to the county through the developers as they developed those sites. I was able to negotiate, and over the years, we've accumulated more and more sites. The last one we just got was a couple of weeks ago at Battery Dancer. We got an additional 15 acres around that park that was donated to us. We used the American Battlefield Protection Program grant, a donation from another source, and the landowner donated a large proportion of the value of the property towards the grant. So we got the property through that, and the property was deeded to the county.
You're hearing from George Fickett and Scott Williams, who represent the Chesterfield Historical Society. And since you mentioned preservation, how difficult is it to preserve some of these sites? Certainly modern development is spread out from using Richmond as an epicenter. It just spread out. There's almost, for instance, northward, it's a community from Richmond to Boston.
Yes.
And southward, we're heading down toward Raleigh and Charlotte. How difficult is it to, when people want to build homes and shopping centers, to keep the historical places, not just necessarily Civil War, but certainly they are significant, how difficult is it to keep them pristine?
Well, initially in preserving these sites, it was basically you discovered the site when the bulldozer was rolled off the trailer. That goes back to the Manassas fiasco. Today, again, with Scott and I both working for the county and mapping, we've gone out on our weekends on our volunteer time, and we've GPSed all of the earthworks that still exist in the county. Those are now in the county database, and planning and engineering uses those in review of site review. So if a developer comes in, and wants to develop a site, they say, well, there seems to be some Civil War impact on your property. Contact the Historical Society, and then we will look at it and say, either that's not an issue, go ahead and do what you want to do, or we do would like to save a proportion of this. And so we're ahead of the game now, but over the years, it's taken sometimes as much as 10 to 11 years to negotiate for a site to save it. But they're not overnight.
Does the county have any clout to say, you can't develop there?
Not really. No.
We don't stand in opposition. If someone's going to develop a site, we try to work with them. We try to educate them on what was there and why it was important. A lot of times they'll tell us, well, hey, I had no idea this was here. Let's see if we can work something out. Sometimes that doesn't happen. So we lose sites, but we've saved a lot too. I mean, I am a realist. I know that there's miles and miles and miles of earthworks in Chesterfield County, and we can't preserve every foot of them, but we can try to identify the most important areas and work with the development community to preserve what we can. And George has been very successful with that.
Certainly maps overlaid over current maps will show what's happening, what happened when and where you are. Let's give the phone numbers or addresses. If people want to get that book that gives them the tour of Bermuda 100 campaign, how do they do that?
They'll contact the Chesterfield Historical Society, and they can direct you to the proper places to either purchase the book or order it directly from.
Yeah. What you could do, though, is if you have a computer, you can go on and type in Chesterfield Historical Society of Virginia. It'll come to our website. You will go to the icon that says Civil War, and it will give you the information, phone numbers and stuff where our booklet is available. And also, if you go on there, Scott has created, or one of our committee members has Robert Foreman has created an animation of all the battles in Chesterfield County. So you can click on a particular battle, and it has all the movements of the troops showing you where those troop movements were within that particular battle in the Bermuda 100 campaign. This is a fascinating event that he's done. This is something really neat to look at because you actually visually see the movements, not just a stagnant map with lines and arrows.
What else do you find interesting about the Bermuda 100 campaign?
Well, I think one thing that is very interesting about Butler's campaign, number one of the things that I've found fascinating studying it over the years, once you get beyond the battles and the movements, you get into the personalities. One of the big factors of Butler's campaign was the fact that he and his subordinates fought constantly, and that led to a lot of bad decision-making. I think that limited their potential to be successful. It was the way these men fought. Another really interesting aspect of the Army of the James was Butler was a big proponent in the use of African-American troops. And he had more United States colored troops under his command than any other general. We just recently celebrated commemorated the 150th anniversary of the battle at Newmarket Heights over in Henrico County. Those were troops that came out of Chesterfield County. Those were Butler's men. They crossed the river at Deep Bottom and fought that battle. Another interesting thing, the Dutch Gap Canal, where Henricus is today, that was Ben Butler's idea. He put his troops to work digging that canal, thinking that he would be able to bypass a Confederate gun position and allow the Navy to get upriver to those Confederate ironclads I spoke about earlier. So a lot of little side things. As I found over the years, the more we study this campaign, the more I learn about it. It's never a complete thing. There's all these little interesting tidbits that we're discovering.
Scott Williams and George Fickett represent the Chesterfield Historical Society, and we've been talking about the Bermuda 100 campaign in the Civil War. You're listening to Discovering Virginia on the Virginia Voice, and for the Virginia Voice, I'm Lou Dean.